But we've already had it previously. Right. We had it the last week, 2 weeks ago, or something like that, where we said, are these all happening simultaneously? Or is this that every time that he does it, they say to him, hey, don't do it, and he does it. Don't do it, he does it. Don't do it, he does it. And in that case, what do we learn?
Yes,
in that case, he gets Bacchus for each and every time, because he's been warned and he violates. He's been warned and he violates.
Every
sees
a thousand sets of Malko being sprung, he would survive it.
Yeah.
But the other thousand people are not going to receive anything.
Yeah,
right? Because they're entirely passive.
Yes.
Well, I mean, really, you're opening this up. I mean, it becomes a big
I'll be honest with you. This is very nice as an illustration, but in reality, is it going to happen?
I'll try to do it.
It's not going to happen. I mean, it's an interesting point of view, but I cannot see a situation where, unless all the thousand people are ignorant of the law. You understand?
Well, but if they're not, I don't want to belabor that, passive, if they're not doing anything.
Right.
They don't even help out. They just sit there.
Right.
Okay. They're not going to receive Malko. So they have no problem for this violation.
Well, that's only if you hold the view of the Chachamim. But what if you want to go according to Rabbi Yehuda's point of view?
Well, see, Rabbi,
then you deserve it.
Rabbi Yehuda actually, although he discouraged it, maybe he thought of this particular.
Okay, maybe you are on the same channel as Rabbi Yehuda.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So then the next slice, it says Amashkis Pasakano, which. Oh yeah, I didn't finish the Rashi for this. Okay, so let me finish the Rashi. Says Omar Lachomani. You see that? That's right after Lilko over there. Okay.
Yeah.
He says Omar Lachomani. I show you Lachor Kaman. If somebody would ask you, according to whose opinion this is, so Ka'amrit, you said that Nikof Leike, right? That the person who is being shaved, right? Who is being barbered, right? Gets Malkus. So Amalei, then in that case, he says, you tell him if you want to know who the authority would be for something like that, it's Rabbi Yehuda. It's Rabbi Yehuda, right? The Omaleel who said up above, said previously, Lav Shein B'Maaseh Lokin, right? The Hainu, and this is Lav Shein B'Maaseh. The Nikov, who the Ko'ovar, Alav the Lo Sakifo, because even the Nikov has violated the negative prohibition of, lo sakifu. The shamin and the kra, hochi, and so we can understand that the text of the Torah is to be interpreted as follows. Lo sakifu, right? Not only does it mean do not do so actively, but also it also means lo sanichu lahakif. Don't permit your head, you see, to be rounded. Okay.
See?
I want to just stress, take a moment for dikduk, okay? When we study the Hebrew language, we know that there are what we call different binyanim, okay? In other words, we use the word, conjugations and so on. That's not a very good translation for it because it doesn't correspond. In the Hebrew, for example, an ordinary action usually would be expressed in what we call the kal. Okay? A little bit more oomph to it might be expressed by APL. Okay? By APL. I say it might be because there are many reasons why we have a kal and why we have a PL. You can take the same root, you see, and give it a somewhat different meaning. As for example, who so far means what? He counted. Who siper could be either he told, English recounted, right? But it also means that he cut the hair, because the word in the Hebrew also means to do that. So the PL already has added meanings as well. Okay. But then we have a binyan that we call the hifil. Okay? Now, literally, hifil means that you cause the action to take place, okay? Now, if that's the way you understand lo sakifu, it's not only then that the person who is actually doing it is guilty of that, but the person, as Rashi points out over here, who permitted it to take place, permitted this activity to take place, is also guilty. So that would be the answer to the question that you raised before, okay? And that's the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda, in other words, okay? In other words, demoniach lahakif kimakif. In other words, the person who permits himself to have his head rounded is as if he did it himself, okay? Inami. Likewise, he says, b'da'afke b'lishon rabim. Another reason is that the word in the Torah doesn't say lo sakif, right? Well, we have many commandments in the Bible where it's addressed in the singular, right? But how is it addressed? It's lo sakifu, which of course is addressed in the plural. Okay? So if it's addressed b'lashon rabim, as he says in the plural, they say lo sakifu, then mashma, the implication is the Yisrei komes herachmono nikuf emakif. That the implication is that the Torah has already given us horror, in other words, has already given warning that this is a violation not only to the makif but also to the nikuf. No, if the Torah has already given such a warning, then in that case, if a person does it in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, then he should also get makif. Okay.
So Rashi is, in effect, agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda, right?
He's explaining him.
Explaining him.
Okay. Don't say that Rashi necessarily has to agree.
Right.
But he's explaining exactly what is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Okay?
Okay.
All right, going back to the text of the Gemara now. Tanu Rabbanan pa'asikono. Right? Torah says, velo sashchis es pa'asikonecha. Right? That you shall not literally mar or destroy the corner of your beard. So the question is, what is pa'asikono? What does it mean, the corner of your beard? So the answer is, right, pa'asikono, he says, sovsikono, means the end of his beard. So what is the end of his beard? The Yesu is sovsikono, he says, shibboleth zikono. Now, shibboleth means literally an ear of corn, or an ear of grain. You know, the word corn that you have in the English translation isn't necessarily what we call Indian corn. Understand? Because in England, corn normally means grain, which is used for baking, bread, foodstuffs, and so on. Okay? It's one of these differences between the English and American English. Okay? This is why, I use the word Indian corn. That's not exactly either, but you know that in other languages, they refer to what we enjoy eating as maize in English, right?
Yes.
This is what they call it, okay? So, but at any rate, if you take a look at it, then even with an ear of corn, you can see, it sprouts out over here. But you've seen pictures of, let's say, wheat or rye, where you see that it goes out this way. So that, in other words, he says that this is a prohibited area. But if it sprouts out, then it means this would also be a prohibited area, this would be a prohibited area. You understand? Besides this area over here, which we said is, the Pas Zakon, and it's also Pas Rosh. In other words, where the beard and the head meet in this area, this would also be prohibited areas. Okay? Needless to say, there is a difference of opinion as to where exactly in the human anatomy every single point is to be found. But according to the Gemara, there are five different places where it is an Isser to shave. Again, remember, an Isser to shave if you use what? A tar. Okay? So, here, somewhere around over here, right? And somewhere over here. These would be approximately the prohibited points. Okay. All right. Then the Gemara says, "V'amisoret smita achas." And likewise, if a person makes a gash, right? Remember? So, what kind of a gash are we talking about? So he says, Tan Rabban says, Vesorat, actually, it's not Vesorat, it should really be Veseret, because the Pasuk says, Veseret lo nefesh, lo sitnu bivsalchem, which means literally a gash or a scratch or whatever you want to say, right? In your skin, right? In your flesh, you should not, make. Okay? So the seret, what does the Torah say? This seret, he says, Yochel apilu sorat al beiso shenofal. Should we say that if he made a seret for the fact that, for example, his house burned or fell, right? An earthquake, whatever happened to it, it collapsed, right? The house collapsed. Or the asfinosa shetova. Or let's say he had an investment in a boat. And what happened to this boat? The boat sank. Of course, it could be an investment in the boat itself, or it could be an investment in the schoira that was, he had merchandise that was being transported on the boat, and it sank. So, when he heard the bad news, what did this guy do? He ripped. Right? He made a ripping. So, are we to say that if this is the reason why he did it, then what? That he is guilty, and he deserves what? Deserves Malkus. So Talmud Lomar, this is why the Torah says specifically what? Says lo nefesh. In other words, it's only for a dead person if he did it. Eino chayov, he is not liable, el al hameis bilvad. Right? Only for a dead person. Uminayin, and how do we know? He says, the mesoret chameis sritos al meis echot. That if a person made five different gashes for one dead person, lechayev al kol svito svito, that he is liable to a set of malkos for each and every gash that he made, right? How do we know that? Let's see, did I skip something? Right. This is why the Torah says, the seret and a gash lechayeva called svito svita, to make him liable for a set of malchus for each and every one they did. Alright, now this we have to look at the Rashi again, see how Rashi explains it. Okay,
this seems to contradict the idea that tattoos are prohibited.
We didn't have the tattoo yet. That's coming up the next.
That's the next one.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I mentioned all of these last time and weeks ago, because in the general introduction I pointed out that all these psukim are related one to another.
Right.
You know, it's written the Seret Nevish, first it's written Lo Sisimu, Koch Bein Echem Lameis, right?
Okay.
In other words, do not first of all, make a bald spot for a dead body, right? And then it's written the Seret Nevish Le Sitnu Bivsarchem, that you are not to make a scratch or a gash in your flesh for a dead body. And then it's written, Uksovis Kaka Lo Sitnu Bivsarchem, nor are you to make a tattoo mark in your flesh. Okay, so that'll be the next Mishnah coming up on the next page over there. Okay? All right. Milta Hashem, I hope we'll get over there if we move a little. But again, my purpose is not to rush through this. The purpose is to understand the text. Okay. All right. So Rashi. I'll skip a little bit. Well, all right. I don't want a slight Rashi, so we may as well finish over there. All right, so we're up to Rabbi Omar, but that's with the previous statement. Okay, Rabbi gave a different explanation. He said, like Tzrichus nu kumi k'Rabbi Yehuda. He says, you don't have to interpret it like Rabbi Yehuda. Hach b'raiso, this statement that was made, the Tanitana kamedu afchista, the kaima b'makiv is not zbay. In other words, it can be explained that the person does it to himself. Then the Kamash Malon teaches us that the Chayav Tarte, he deserves two. Why? Mishum Makiv and Mishum Nikov. He deserves two sets because he's the Makiv, and at the same time it's doing it to himself, so he's the one who's having it done to himself. So he deserves twice. The Salkadatech Amina, because you might think Le Lilke Yelechado, that he should only get one set of Malkas. So Kamash Malon, This is why the Baraisa teaches us that he deserves two sets of malchus if he did it himself. Okay. All right. And then Medivrei HaKol, the Lotzerch of the Turitza Rabbi Yehuda Higen. You don't have to say that this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So you have, you know, that everybody would be in agreement that under these circumstances, you know, if he did it to himself, then in that particular case he deserves malchus both for being a makiv and a nikam. And then we had the other one, Misayeya, right? And this was the other opinion that was given. That was Rav Ashi's, who said, but what does it mean, Misayeya? So he says, Mazbin Hasi'oris Lamakiv. In other words, he offers his hair, right? Literally, you know, Mazmin would mean like he invites, okay? He invites his hair to face the barber, okay? So, or he, yes, he, okay. All right, now what is the Shibboleth Zokon? He says, Kulhu Chomesh Peos. He says there are five different corners, the Kochoshim Mastisim, Bichlau, Shibboleth Zokon. He says all of them can be included in this image that he gives of the Shibboleth of the ear. In other words, just as it sprouts here and it sprouts here and it sprouts there, so this is the implication, okay? This is the way Rashi understands it. All right, now Talmud Lomav is Sereth, right? What did we say? We said that, you know, if a person, you know, made, right, five sritos, right, five gashes for one dead person, we said that he deserves five times, and he gets it. Why? He says, because the text says v'seret. So, how does the word v'seret imply that? I mean, that he might be liable to five sets if he did it, you know, for the same mess, five different places. It says, the Motzi L'michtav, Torah could have written as follows, L'netesh, for a dead person, lo sis v'tu, don't do it. B'mekom, b'seret l'nevesh, lo sit nu. Okay? Instead of using the expression, and for, you know, a gash for a dead person, you shall not put, give, or whatever you want to say, and so on. Torah could have simply been short and said, lo sis v'tu, that's all, enough. So why does it say v'seret? So in other words, it's the teachers for that. Okay. Loshen Acher, another explanation. He says, Talmud Loimar, Torah says, v'seret, nirguye devav. The fact that the Torah says, it simply could have said, seret l'nefesh. Right? Why does it say, v'seret l'nefesh? In order to teach us that this is to include any seret that he makes. That each and every one of them is liable. So this is, you know, how they derive from the text itself these particular teachings. How the drash is derived. Okay. So now we go back to the text over there near the bottom over there. All right. All right. So he says, look, the second line from the bottom. See it?
Yeah.
It says, for half pick the base shanoflas when shoot over by your right? He says, look, how come you took out, in other words, you excluded, you know, from this punishment of Malchus for a person who makes Seret for what? For his home which collapsed, or for the ship, you know, his ship which sank in the ocean. Why shouldn't he get Malchus for doing that? If it's Seret, he's making a Seret, right? So he says, Kosova Rabbi Yossi, right? So, explanation over here is the Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that Srito Ugedido Achatzi, that whether it says Seret or whether it says Losis Go to Do, which means, you know, literally don't gash yourself, it's all the same thing. It could have said Seret, and it could have said Losis Go to Do, and it wouldn't make any difference. Uchasiv Hosam, and since over there, namely in the business where it says losses go to do, right? It's written over there, you know, lames for a dead person. So in that particular case, if it means exactly the same thing, then just as over there by gedida, as we would say, in other words, cutting is prohibited for a dead body, so the same thing is true that seret, if you make a, you know, a scratch into your flesh, that this is equally prohibited, but only when? For a mace. This is what he's saying. Okay? So in other words, what is he excluding? He's excluding the other two, you know, in other words, for an accident that befalls and you feel so wrought up with emotion that you feel that the, you know, that you do this, you know, so then in that particular case, you would not be liable. Pardon me? Good question. What does he do with the word of nefesh? Okay? Yeah. If we're going to say that lemeis is the reason for it, and according to Rabbi Yossi's opinion, then in that case, what is he going to do with lenefesh? You're absolutely right. So we'll see. Maybe we'll find a use for it. Okay?
He basically is setting up a gezeirah shavah in this?
It's not really a gezeirah shavah. Gezeirah shavah would mean that the two words are identical.
Oh.
Okay? But these are two different words. One is Seret and the other one that says Los is good.
Right,
all right.
That's what you're saying. Right,
right. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. By the way, all right, let's just take the first line up there, up on top in the Rashi. It says, Kosava Rabbi Yossi, that's Svito Gidudah Chasi, right? That they're the same thing. The Tarvaihu, both of them, would not make a difference in accordance with Rabbi Yossi's opinion, whether it was Bain Bayad, whether it was done simply by hand, Bain Bekli. Or whether it was done with an instrument. Let's say you took a knife and you gashed yourself. Okay? It wouldn't make any difference. Uchsiv bigdida, and written in connection with the word los is godedu, right? It's written la meis, right? So los is godedu, but los is simu kocho. That's where we find it. Okay? So, as Rona pointed out, in that case, it's going to leave us the word nefesh, right? What are we going to do with that? So we'll find a use for it. Yot Sasha. Okay. Do not despair. There has to be an answer, I hope. Alright. So, alright. So, according to Rabbi Yossi, it means the same thing, right? So, Omar Shmuel. So, Shmuel says, Hamisoreit Bichli Chayav. Shmuel is saying, I disagree with Rabbi Yossi. He's saying, in my opinion, if a person makes a gash, literally a seret, but he does it with an instrument, not with his fingers, right, then he is chayav. So in other words, what is he saying? What he is saying essentially is as follows, that in my opinion, if he uses only his hand, then he would not be chayav. But if he uses a kli, this already is a violation of what the Torah says. Alright. Mesbe. So they ask the following kasha. It says, you say Srito Gedida Achatzi, right? That Srito and Gedida are exactly the same action. Eloisha Srito Biyad, right? Srito is by hand or Gedida Bechlihu, right? The Omak of Rabbi Yossi. Alright. So that would be an agreement then with Rabbi Yossi, right? Namely, that what? Whether it was done by hand or by knife, so to speak, he would be equally guilty, because according to Rabbi Yossi, he makes no distinction between the two. Okay? Alright. Tani Tano Kame de Rabbi Yochanan. So now, they quote another Tana. This time, the Tana taught the following in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan. According to others, in the presence of Rav Nachman, that's what the marginal note on the right says. All right, namely, al meis, the Torah says al meis, so it's bein bayad, bein bekli chayav. Right, in other words, he deserves malchus whether he did it by hand or whether he did it with an implement. If he's doing it for what? If he's doing it, you know, for a dead person. Okay. But aladodas kechovim, but what say he made a gash as a symbol of idolatry? Okay? It's an idolatrous act. Then in that case,
right?
Pardon me?
Kechovim stars?
Yeah.
Stars?
Because they used to worship the stars.
Yeah, right, right. You mean, why does it say aladodas kechovim? Yes. Because, exactly, you know, they worship the stars, the constellations, and so on and so forth. I mean, and don't forget, I mean, the whole business of astrology, right? I mean, it's based upon, you know, look, you have Mars and you have Venus and so on. These were Roman gods. They were Roman gods. So the stars were given names after the Roman gods. So obviously, in the Roman mind, you know, there was a connection between the two. Okay, so therefore, if you follow this business, then in that particular case, it's a form of idolatry. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Vayis Kaychovim, he says, for Yod Chayev, if he did it by hand, then he is liable to Malchus, but the Kli Potter. If he did it with an implement, then he would be Potter. So they immediately object. They say, hey, wait a minute, they say. Just the opposite is written in the Bible. What's written over there? So if you remember the story about Eliyahu HaNavi, Mount Carmel, right? What is written over there? It's written over there by Yizgoydadu Kemishpotam. In other words, the priests of Baal cut themselves even as was their custom to do so. V'charovos v'varamochim, with swords and with spears. So in other words, Eloheimo, so therefore I have to say opposite, namely, biyad potter, if a person only made a gash by hand, then he's potter. But if he did it, Aveda Zora, you know, with an implement, then in that case, he is guilty. Alright, then it says, v'chayav al rosh, in other words, he is liable for the head, you know, if anything, you know, if, let's say, he, you know, any place in the head, you know, that he made, you know, this form of korcha, etc., etc., it says, Machve Rab Sheshes ben Pirka de Reisha. So, Rab Sheshes gave a practical demonstration that what do we mean by the various places, you know, where it happens, various places of the head. I wish that we had an illustration.
He made a video?
Yeah, he made a video for them, right. He showed them in his own face, you know, this is prohibited and this is prohibited and so on. These are the prohibited areas. And the same thing, okay. And then the Alazokon. Likewise, the beard, you know, Shtayim Mekan, Yachzbil Mata. There are two places on this side and two places on this side and one down below over there, that these are the five. And again, he showed them exactly where are the five prohibited areas. Okay? That's why I say I would be very happy if we had an illustration over here so that we know exactly what they're talking about. Because the authorities themselves are in a disagreement as to where exactly the five areas are. Okay? Rabbi Eliezer, Mary says, and Nitolan, if you remember, that he took them all at the same time, that in that particular case, he's only liable to how much? To one. Kosora, because he said, Chad Lavhu, there's only one love that's involved. Okay, so therefore, even if he made, let's say, five korchos at the same time, then he only deserves one set of malchus. Okay.
But if he was born five times.
Ah, that's a difference. Then in that case, okay. Correct. But if he only did it successively in five different places, but without being warned, except, you know, for the first time.
First time,
right.
Yeah.
Alright, but he is not liable to Malchus until he actually uses a razor for this. So the sages taught us, the Torah says, and they shall not shave literally the corner of their beard. So are we to think that even if he used only scissors in order to shave the area, that he would be liable to Malchus? So Talmud Loma, this is why the Torah says, Lo sashchis, do not mar, do not destroy. In other words, Lo sashchis, if you're not actually marring or destroying by use, you know, of a sharp knife, the way the razor is, okay, then in that case you're not violating it. Yochol, how about if we say Imliktob Imalakit for Hitni Yehechayev, right? That if he plucked the hair with a tweezer, or if he used this Hitni on it, that he should be liable also, right? So Talmud Loma, that's why the Torah says Lo Yigalehu. In other words, what does it mean you shall not shave? Ho Ketzat Giluach. What do we mean by Giluach? So the answer is Sheyesh Bo Hashchosa. Heavy Omer Zetar. There has to be an implement which can actually destroy or mar, namely a knife. So Rabbi Yoimer, this is a tar, in other words, a razor. And finally, Rabbi Eliezer, Mafil Dikta be Malakit be Hitli Chayat. Rabbi Eliezer of the opinion that even if he used a Malakit or a Hitli, he should be liable. So I say, Manapshach. What exactly is he saying over here? How do you figure it out? If he learns one from the other, in other words, the lo says go to do, and lo says sima korcho, and so on and so forth, and lo sakifu, if it's all from the same thing, then in that case, there's no question that he should only learn that if he used the tar, that he should be guilty, right? But if he didn't learn it, then misparayim nami. Then in that particular case, then you would say that even if he used not the malakit or anything, but even if he used scissors, which he did not object to, you see, didn't say you can't use scissors. But if he didn't have a gezeira shava, you know, then in that particular case, so we should say that he should also have said then that scissors too. So he says, yes, he really did learn gezeira shava, but the Kosovar, he was of the opinion that Hane Nami Giluach Abde, that these also actually are ways of making, of shaving. In other words, in accordance with his opinion, to use Rahitni or to use Malake, this too is an act of shaving. This is his opinion. But, as I say, the sages did not agree with him, and so anything other than a tar would be permissible. So, Baruch Hashem, we are now on Chof Aleph, Omid Aleph, and we'll start from the new Mishnah next week, where we're going to talk about tattooing. And tattoos.
Oh, tattooing.
Right, tattooing.
Tattooing.
Right.
I wanted to ask you, what race...
Xovus Kaka.
Even sounds onomatopoeic.
Yes.
Kaka, tattoo.
Yeah. Tattoo, kaka. Okay, whatever.
Homophonic.
Well, one translation of the word kakea is actually to make an incision in something. Okay. Bora uses the expression of the kakea bitsesam, which means literally like to. Really means to destroy them, but literally it's to destroy their eggs so that they don't have an opportunity, you know. So, but here, of course, I guess maybe incision would be about the best translation. Now, ksovis, of course, obviously this is the word to write, so that ksovis kaka means a writing, literally, that is formed by an incision. Okay? Now, this continues. Hi. For what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
S-O?
Kolkach. No, Kolkach. Right. Kolkach to, so good. Okay.
I'm just thinking of the word
solace. Oh, alright. Anyway, I was going to say, prior to this interruption, that, this sort of is the last in the series, based primarily upon what we read in Parsha Kedoshim, you know, things that are prohibited because they are idolatrous practice. We learned that, of course, Leisa Simon Korcho Bein Adechem Lameis, right, that you're not allowed to make any baldness. And of course, when we translated, Bene Nechem, so we saw that it doesn't mean over here between the eyes, because there's no hair over here, but it means in the forehead over here, okay? And then from that, of course, we went to Lo Sakifu Pas Roshchem, right? Another, you're not allowed to round the corners of your head by cutting off the payas over here, you know, so that they have only round fringe of hair left over there. that you can't do, you know, like some of the schwatzes that you see running around that way. That would be prohibited by the law of the Torah. And
well,
then, of course...
Are we referring to mourning here?
Obviously, yes,
yeah,
of course.
Mourning. Okay.
Yeah. No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. You see, the korcho, making baldness, that it says specifically lames.
Mm-hmm.
For a dead person. That it says specifically. Whereas, lo sakif bas roshchem, it doesn't say whether it's for a mace or for anything else. It's just that this is a prohibited practice because probably the idolaters like to do that, okay?
Yeah.
And then the next one that we learned was lo sashchis is pasuk konecha, right? That you're not allowed to destroy the beard, the corners of the beard. Of course, we saw that there are five corners which are prohibited areas. Only the kasha is, you know, what are the five prohibited areas? So I gave an approximation, but I don't guarantee that's 100% right, because we learned that even the rabbis themselves, they needed a visual lesson as to what the areas of the beard are, okay? And then following that, you know, we had the business of a seret lenefesh, right? That you're not allowed to make literally scratching, you know, to make tear a gash or something, right? And that, of course, is combined with what we learned in Parsha A, you know, where it says over there, you know, Bonim Atem L'Hashem L'Keichem, Los is going to do, but Los is Simon Korcho. In other words, so what is Los is going to do? So the translation over there is that you're not to cut. And as we learned, one would be Biyad, and the other one would be the Kli. In other words, not to make a gash by hand, or not to make a gash using an instrument. But as we saw, primarily it is for the dead, because, you know, this would be prohibited. But as we learned, to mean that, if, for example, in anguish because he lost his fortune, his ship sank and so on, right? Remember? His house fell. And in that case, if he went and he did this out of, you know, anxiety, but not as a mark, you know, with all they deserve, so to speak, and it's not for a dead person, then we saw, you know, that in that case it would not be chayiv malchus. Doesn't mean he should do it. I mean, who in his right mind goes around tearing pieces of flesh, you see? But nevertheless, he would not be chayiv malchus for that. Okay. And then finally in Kedoshim, the last of the series goes, so it's kaka, loisit mevsarchem. You're not allowed to make literally a writing by incision in your flesh. So, naturally, this is what we refer to as tattooing. So, this is what the Mishnah now says. A koisev kesubas kaka, if a person literally does, makes a tattoo, in other words, he writes this kind of an incision. So, kosav velo kaka, or kaka velo kosav, enu chayev achichta via kaka, viyot. Alright, let's take it phrase by phrase, because first I want to get the whole sentence and then we'll break it down to its component elements. Okay, so obviously a person who writes kasovis kaka, then in that case, what is his punishment for putting a tattoo on his flesh? It's malchus. Okay, but now the Mishnah says, what happens if he just wrote on his flesh, right? But he didn't write. He didn't make the incision in order to get the writing into his flesh. Okay? Or vice versa. He made pinpricks in his flesh, but he didn't add anything that would be writing, you see. So in that particular case, Einu Chayev. He is not liable to Malchus. When will he be liable to Malchus? Ad sheyichtov b'kaka b'yodo. Becomes liable only when he writes with his hand and then he incises it in his flesh, right? And what does he use? He uses kechol. Kechol is a blue coloring matter. In English, it's spelled sometimes K-O-H-L, kohl, okay? And it was used back in the days of the Gemara women use it in order to adorn themselves.
Mascara,
right,
for
their eyes, right? It's like a mascara and so on. Exactly.
Cosmetic.
Of course, absolutely. The Egyptians did it, and the Jewish women did it, and so on. And you know, the bride is permitted to do that, you see. We learned the Gemara way, 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 way back. It's Gemara in Satenum, but also we learned it someplace else. So I think it was, learning kindness, I think. At any rate, they're talking over there about, you know, what would be a worthy rub, a worthy person to ordain. So they have different things, you know, in reference to songs that they sang at the time of the ordination in order to have the person rejoice. And similarly, you know, there were songs that they would sing to the kala. Like, for example, we still use to this very day, at a good traditional wedding, that we say Ketzad Barakum Teyakala, right? How do you dance before the kala? So we say Kala Nova Chasuda. So the same thing, the Gemara over there says, one of the phrases is Lekochal V'Leisharak V'Lo Pirkes V'Yalas Hain. In other words, did not use this kol, this kachol, right? Lo shorak, didn't use all kinds of rouge. Lo pirkus, didn't use all kinds of other cosmetics. But yalastein, and yet he's a beauty. In other words, he doesn't need any of the external things in order to enhance the beauty of his own character, which shines through. And the same thing was true of a kala too, you see. That she was kala no of a chasuri, you see. So, this is kachol. And Gemara uses the expression kemachachol foferes. The machachol was the applicator that was used to apply the kol, and the shpoferes literally recognized like the word shofar over there. Shpoferes was like a horned container in which they kept the kol. And of course, you know, archaeologists have found many specimens of these things. All right. So, what is the Mishnah saying over here? Stating that very simply, that it is not considered a ksovas kaka unless he does it with his hand, that's he himself, what? He smears with his hand, right? He makes the incision and he's using something which is going to leave a permanent dye. Pardon me?
You see the emendation on the side?
It will come to it.
For yada?
Yeah.
Where's
yeah.
the word for the person that does it?
Pardon me? Oh, the artisan? Yeah. No, Mekake, I guess, right? What else are you going to say?
Is
he allowed to do it?
Yeah.
No, because you shouldn't let it be done to you.
What?
You should not let it be done to you.
No, I say, is he allowed to be.
A Jew should not do it. I mean, it reminds me of what we learned before about, you know, Chayav HaMakir V'Hanikon. Remember we learned that last week? That the person who rounds his head, right,
yeah,
is liable whether he's doing the actual job or whether it's being done to him. All right, so we said afterwards that if he's a Nikov, in other words, he does absolutely nothing, he just sits quietly, minds his own business, and lets it be done to him, and in that case he wouldn't get Malkus. But it doesn't mean that therefore it's a permissible act,
oh,
you understand?
Yeah.
Well, I hope that it wasn't in accordance with the what the Gemara says. All right. Shouldn't be a Misayel in Barabera, you see. You know what Misayeya means? Misayeya means somebody who helps, like we had over here, you know. They said that if, on the other hand, the guy who was the Nikov, the one who was permitted his head around, if he was Misayeya, in other words, he helped out too, in what way? So, you know, as Rashi said, you know, by, for example, you know, he parted his hairs, right? He arranged them in such a way so that, you know, it could be done to him. In that case, he was helping.
There
so
there should be no problem if you're doing it to the non-Jew.
I didn't actually do it to him. I just drew a picture.
To make
the
a cover kaka on somebody
the picture,
who's
he put it on.
Look, if a guy does it to another guy, he's on his friends, are they going to cough? They're permitted to do it.
No,
I drew the picture.
Can a Jew do it on another?
But that, no, a Jew should not do it, that's all. Because you are Misayel and Barber. I understand, I mean,
but
granted
not
a guy, right.
If it's not, it's because it's Kamin Hatzah, Hagoyim, you're not supposed to do it to we're not supposed to do it to ourselves, but if you're helping a guy do it to himself, is that a problem?
Well, I would say that from the point of view of halacha, yes, it is a problem. Yeah, because you're doing something that the Torah says not to do. Granted,
yeah,
you're not doing it to yourself, but you're doing it to somebody else. But you're still doing something that should not be done. So it's a problem. I mean, because we have I don't know how many Jews are engaged in running tattooing parlors. There must be a few of them around. But whether they're Orthodox Jews or not, I don't know. Yeah, well, of course.
Seriously, it could open up a Pandora's box with that view. I respect that.
Yeah.
But then there's a whole broad spectrum that you could say, hey, I do it to a guy and it doesn't mean anything. Thou shalt not steal. Steal for me.
No. Wait. Only because a guy is not forbidden to do it. There's no reason for a guy not to do it. The only reason, basically, it seems that the reason behind it is that we should not resemble the goy. So it's not that a goy is not permitted to do it, it's that we're not permitted to do it.
Okay. Have to say one other thing. We have not yet reached the end of the Gemara here. We'll see that a reason specifically is given for it. Okay? Alright. Now, Mike over here called our attention to the fact that there is an emendation in the side over there. Take a look. Instead of biyodo, which means with his own hand,
makes no sense.
Right? It may not. A person shouldn't do it with his own hand. But nevertheless, he could also certainly, he's going to use a kli in order to do it.
The syntax
right,
is very
right.
strange. Just syntax.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But I wouldn't say the syntax it is. But at any rate, we see that in the margin over there, there's a different reading. And the suggested reading is bidyo.
Right.
In other words, with ink, uvichol, or with kechol. Because, and then what's the next one? Uvichol dover shuroshim. Or with anything that he's going to write something that will make a lasting impression. So in other words, any type of an ink, whatever it may be, or any type of a dye, whatever it may be, then in that particular case, he is liable to Malkus because he has violated the business of the Ksovas Kaka, as the Torah says. Yehuda in the name of Rab Shimon, actually there's so many Rab Shimons around, probably in the name of what Rab Shimon, the answer would probably be Rab Shimon ben Yochai. Okay, he says as follows: Eino chayav ad sheyichtov shem es Hashem. He is not liable until he writes there the name. Now naturally, if we see the word es Hashem, the divine name, right, so it means that he would be liable if he writes the name of God over there, correct? We'll see, however, that the Gemara disputes this. Okay.
The other Gersa?
Huh?
Changes the word before. You like the other Gersa?
Well,
Hashem, take out the S.
Yeah, right. But that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything.
Hashem implies specifically almost the tetragrammaton, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, right.
You say Hashem,
this is why
Hashem wouldn't be good enough.
Yeah, but how S affects it.
If you have Shem Hashem, if you take out the S, then it's Shem Hashem. It's not Shem Hashem.
Yeah.
It's Shem Hashem.
Okay.
Would you agree?
No. I have to give the following interpretation.
Okay.
First blush, what we see as Hashem, it's no question that means the divine name. And the Gemara too is going to ask a similar question. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As we'll see. But if we take out the word S, then what do we have? Ad sheyichtov Shem Hashem, the name, but without specifying
which
name we're talking about. You understand? Because afterwards we'll discover that actually the name that they're talking about is not the name of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, but the name of the Avodah Zarah. So in other words, why is this a prohibited act? Because in reality he's writing his name, that's the name of the Avodah Zarah upon him. Okay? Seeing this, by the way, reminds me of the pasuk in Yeshayahu, where he says, "Zeyikro b'shem Hashem, zeyichtov l'shem, zeyichtov shmor l'Hashem," etc., etc. Okay, so he describes different things. I don't remember the exact wording right now, but it's in Shayahu. I remember what the pasuk says. Everyone has a mark of loyalty. This person says that, you know, he is going to be dedicated to God and so on. And it's certain number there, say, Shem La Shem, let's say yourself. Question is, what are they talking about over there? The answer is, there the reference is really to the wearing of tefillin. Because when we put on tefillin, we are actually taking something wherein God's name is written, and we put it on our head, we put it on our arm, and so on and so forth. So, lahabdil. What do the idolaters do? So they obviously put a name of their own deity that they would put a tattoo mark over there. Of course, we also know that, for example, I've seen some of the tattoos, like, let's say, what Carl has on him. You notice? They have crosses, they have Virgin Marys, quite what's not that they have over there.
Mom would be popular item.
Yeah. So, it's not so strange when you see something like this. And I have no doubt also that we can still find many, many people today, let's say in India or in Africa and so on, that they still do this kind of business.
Have you seen images of some of the incredibly intricate artwork that's done in Japan as far as tattooing? I vividly recall of an entire back covered with tableau.
Right, I've seen pictures of that, right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, right. They have dragons and God knows what
else.
Entire
tableau
there,
with maidens and dragons and warriors.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's
rolling.
Okay, so listen. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, and so is kakala situm bochem on Elishem, right? Do not put Iksovis kaka within you, because I am the Lord. This is the reason why when he says Ani Hashem, this is why if the reading is Ashiyichtav Shom es Hashem, this makes sense. But as I said, it's going to be disputed in the Gemara. However, before we do that, let's take a look at the Rashi and see what Rashi has to say. Okay? Service kaka. So he explains what is the process. He says, Koisev techila al bisoro bisam or bisikra, right? First, he writes what he's going to write, you know, his message, so to speak, upon his flesh, either with a chemical, some, or bisikra. Sikra is a red marker, like a red paint. Okay?
Something that corresponds with Yo into full?
Yeah.
Is it?
Right,
one
right,
on
yeah.
One,
right.
One on one?
Except that sikra normally means a red mark that you make, okay? And the sum would be anything. I mean, it could be any kind of a chemical concoction, okay? Whether it's Dio or whatever it may be, all right? The achakach, and afterwards, what does he do? Mikaka habosa b'machat or b'sakin. He pierces his flesh with a needle or with a knife. V'nichnas hatseva ben ho'or labosa. And as a result, the coloring material enters the skin into the flesh. And it appears there, can be seen there as long as the person lives. Kaka, what is kaka? Says Rashi says it's pointurier. Of course, what is pointurier? The answer is it's old French from the word point. What's point? Point is a point, a dot, okay? In other words, you make points and so on. But also it's related to the idea of puncture. So that, you're making dots, how? By puncturing the skin, you see. We also lichtov shum kesiva ba'olam al besoro be'inyan zeh. And Rashi says it is prohibited to write any kind of a writing in the world on his flesh be'inyan zeh in this way. Shekach gezeres hakosev. Why? Because this is what the Rabbeinu Shel Olam ordained in the Torah. In other words, there isn't in this case, if we say Gezeres HaKosev, it means not necessarily because we identify it with Avodah Zarah, but because if the Rabbeinu Shel Olam said, do not tattoo, we're not allowed to tattoo. Es Hashem, so he says, Meforish Begemora, you see, they looked ahead already in the Gemara, so he says in the Gemara they're going to explain The Shem Aved is Kechovim Koma. What he's referring to is the name of idolatry, some idolatrous name, not the Pater. All right, so the Gemara now asks the Kash, it says.
Can we call on this whether the S was inserted?
Pardon me?
When the S is inserted to point,
right,
which is
right.
More likely. With
right.
An S,
okay.
With an S, you can interpret it more as a Vodas Kechovim than without an S.
Correct. Right. With the S, it would really indicate to the Bein Hashalim, that's Hashem.
Shem.
You know, Shem is Hashem. We say that. It's actually it's a Mishnah Yuma, you know, that we say in the Avodah of Yom Kippur, okay?
Well, it's not an argument about us anyway, since we don't hold that Kachem.
Right. But at any rate, as we can see, that you could read the text one way, but if, on the other hand, you have to understand that when the Gemara comes afterwards and disputes it, there's a reason why. And this is why I think then, it was suggested that we take out the word, okay?
If you stick a pen in your flesh, you get a blue mark. That, by accident,
that
considered
a tattoo? No. Did you do it purposely?
No,
okay. Accidentally. It's accidentally. Okay. Yeah. So, Rav Acha, the son of Rabbi, said to Rav Ashi, said, Adi Yichtev, Ani Ad Hashem, Mamosh? You mean that because the Pasuk says, Ani Ad Hashem, right? Lo Sitnu Bochem, Ani Ad Hashem, right? I am the Lord, so it means that you're not allowed to write Ani Hashem, in other words, God's name. Is that what you mean? So Amalei says, no, that's not what we mean. He says, Kedetone Bar Kapora. As Bar Kapora taught, Eino Chayov, when is he going to be liable to punishment by Malchus? Ad sheyichtov Shema Bedes Kechovim. It's only when he writes the name of idolatry on his flesh, when he tattoos
Shem.
It. Right.
They don't say it's Shem.
Huh?
They don't say it's Shem.
No, definitely not.
Shem.
Right, there's a shame over here, there's no question about it, yeah. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, of the Sevas Ka'ka, Leisit Nu Bochem, Ani Hashem. So why does it say Ani Hashem? It says Ani Hashem because it's Ani Hashem, Velo Acher. Because I am the Lord, and therefore you're not allowed to have any other name of a deity in your flesh. This is the meaning of it. All right? Now we come to something slightly complicated. At any rate, let's first of all take the Rashi up to this point, and then we'll continue. Okay? It says, Ad sheyichtov ani ad Hashem mamash, right? Al tevos halol ani ad Hashem, ato mechayevoy. In other words, if he would write Ani Hashem in tattoo marks on his lips, so he would be liable for violating Sevis Kaka. So that's why they correct it. They say Sevis Kaka Nisut Bochem Shum Sevis Kaka Lo Yasu Lifnei Liponai. Nothing. I mean, not even to write Shem Hashem. This is the idea. Not even to write the Shem Hashem. But nothing should be tattooed, right? Not only that, but you are prohibited from writing any other name of a deity on your flesh. Alma. So we say, Ikar Chiyuva, the basic reason why he is liable to Malchus, right, is Mishum Shema Vedis Kochovimu, right? Is because of the fact that he is writing the name of idolatry, right? Well, Mihu. But nevertheless, also lichtov shum kesiva boilam. You're not allowed to write anything that way by tattooing it. Afilu Reb Shimon, even called Reb Shimon, elo dechiyu malchus leka. But if you would write the shame of a Aveda Zorah, then in that case you wouldn't get malchus. But still, you are violating a law in the Torah. The Torah says you shouldn't do that. Period. You don't do it. So, all right. Now they ask a new question. Omer Amalkiyo. Malkiyo said, Omer Avoda Bar Abba, the name of Rabbi Avoda, says, Also Loy Liyodon, Sheyitin Efe Makle El Gabe Besore. Alright. He says that it is prohibited for a person to put ashes. Apropakla is what, for example, you know, it's a sign of mourning, Erev Tisha B'Av. So what do? You take a piece of wood, you burn it, and this is apropakla, you know, the ashes that you get, and you smear it on the deck, you know. So they used to do the same thing with what? They would take this and smear it on their forehead as a sign of Avelis. Okay?
Charcoal.
Yeah, charcoal, right.
Except
that Ash Wednesday isn't exactly wood. They take palms, you know, who love him, and they burn it. They make it saleable over there.
Wood was another ancient pigment, I guess, more favorite in the British Isles.
Yes.
What color was that? Red, wasn't it?
I always assumed it was blue.
Blue,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Of course, the British had a reputation, you know.
Yeah.
The old Celts who lived over there, they smeared themselves with all the blue. This was their Avodah Zarah.
Right.
Their Avodah Zarah color. You read Caesar, and you read about the description. You know, Caesar was the first Roman to he conquered the British Isles for Rome, and so he gives a description over there also about the practice. Religious practices of the people who lived not only in the British Isles but also in France, because they were Celtics. I mean, they were all related one to another. So, you know, they would take not only this business of smearing themselves in blue, but they would have sacrifices. They would take a person, put him into like a basket, a cage, right, and then set fire to it. This was also part of the Avodah Zarah practice. Nice people. Alright, so anyway, Omar Malki, Omar he says that if a person has a wound, he should not take Afer Makla, he should not take wood ashes, right? Smear them on it, on this wound, because it would appear, it looks like Xavis Kaka. That's what he says, okay? In other words, if you smear it on, it might have the same effect, in other words, of entering the flesh because the flesh has been wounded, right? And then it would be a permanent mark, and so therefore it looks too much like it, and so therefore you shouldn't use that, obviously, for what? In order to use it like a healing, a poultice, or something like that on the flesh, okay? So Rab Nachman, son of Avika, comes in and he says, you know what, there are two men. One is Rav Malkiya and the other one is Rav Malkiyo. And we got to straighten out who said what. Okay? Alright, so far it was Rav Malkiya who said what? That don't put Efer Makla. So Omer Rav Nachman, B'Reid Ravika, some say it wasn't Rav Nachman, but it says somebody else, it says Rav Yechanino. Alright. At any rate, he says, Shefod, Shfochos, the Gumos, Rav Malkiyo. This was said by the din concerning Shfod, Shfochos, and Gumos, which we'll say in a moment what they are. This was given by Rav Malkiyo. And Bloris, Efer Makla, Gvina, is Rav Malkiyo. Alright, so far so good. Now, of course, we have to know what exactly are all these different things. So for that, Baruch Hashem, we have a Rashi. Now, Rashi is going to explain to us what they are. Okay? Alright, Efer Makla. Okay? That's the first thing that is discussed. It says, Dafka Ko'omar. In other words, he said, I'm only talking about Efer Makla. I'm not talking about anything else that you would put on a marker, on a wound in your flesh in order to, you know, provide some healing as a disinfectant and to heal and so on. Lefisha Koshahi. Why is this a prohibited action according to him? He says because this ash, it's hard. Hard in the sense, you know, that it endures for a long time. Others can be washed away easily, but you know, if you smear with ashes, it doesn't go off immediately. Mekakas became a Malka. And what is it going to do? It's going to pierce, it's going to penetrate the place where the wound is, right? The Haroshim Nirasham Achazman. And the impression that it is made can be seen there even after some time has passed. Avol Ofer B'Alma Lo. But dust, or, you know, in general, this would not be prohibited. In other words, you could take some dust or something and put it on if you wish, right? Because let's not mix up what the word Ofer is and what the word Efer is. Although, I have to tell you that at times in the Gemara itself, there's a little bit of a confusion between the two. Ofer means literally dust, and Efer means ashes, okay? But still, at times, the two of them are sort of mixed up. Okay? So that's why he says, we mean specifically Efer, and we do not mean Ofer. Ofer is alright if you put some dust on it in order to sprinkle it. Let's say you wanted to dry up the wound or something like that. From a medical point of view, I'm sure Michael is a much better maven than I am. By the way, Michael, have you ever read this great big book by Preuss on biblical medicine, biblical Talmudic medicine?
Who wrote it, Preuss?
Preuss. He was a German Jewish doctor back in, I would say, about the late 1800s or early 1900s, and he wrote a tremendous volume.
They were closer to those traditional practices
right,
in those days anyway.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, he analyzes many of these different things from a medical point of view. Because, remember, we had a part in the Gemara Brachas when we're studying the last chapter that they give all kinds of remedies over there, besides trying to solve what dreams mean, but also they give also remedies, you know, for this, that, and the other thing, and so on. And many of them actually have a great deal of medical basis, you know, that have validity even today.
Use ashes for remedies?
I'm sure that there are uses for it. I would imagine so, yes. But he says no.
I've seen it.
Yeah. But he says don't smear it on a wound where it's liable to penetrate and remain. This is what he says. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's why we have to hear every word of what Rashi is saying over here. Okay. Okay. So now we know what we mean by Efer Maklin. Okay. Then, what is shvud, which means literally a spit? You know, this is what you roast. Not only you can roast a chicken on a shvud, but you can roast a lamb, or for example, the Korban Pesach or something, you know, they use the shvud in order to do that, all right? So, at any rate, it says, Beferek Ein Sodin. Ein Sodin is a chapter in Gemara Beitza, or Beo, some people say, and deals with laws of Yontif, okay? So he says, Shvod shetzonu boi bosor osel taltalo. If you have a spit upon which you have roasted meat, then you're not allowed to carry it from one place. Let's say it was in this corner of the room where you had it, and you want to put it for storage someplace else. You're not allowed to carry it within the room. Why? Because it's done its job, and at that point, then it would become mutzah to you. So, Amar Rab Malkio, so Rab Malkio comes with a suggestion, and Rab Malkio, Amar Rab Odo, the name Rab Odo, the Shomto Umanicho Bekeren Zobis. He says what he can do is simply to let it drop, right? And then, you know, just put it away. Pardon me? Rabbi Sonnenschein?
He was here
earlier, but he left about 7:30 or so. Did you have an appointment to see him?
Yeah, he was here with the camera.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
TV 22.
They had to check for it in the morning.
Where did you leave it? In the office? Well, if it's in the first office, I can open it. But if it's in... This is the plural of the word shivcha. Shivcha is a maidservant. Okay?
Shivcha's maidservant.
Right. Okay. It says, Mishnah hi befer kafalpi. Says this is the Mishnah in chapter Afalpi in Gemara Ksubas, okay? Where Rabbi Eliezer Imer, Afilu Ichni Salu Meyo, right? question is, what is the situation over there? Okay. The question in the Gemara in Ksubas as to whether a woman, if she is wealthy, can she rely upon her maidservants to do all the work for her, or does she have some obligation to do some type of work? You understand? No? You understand what I'm saying? You know, to do some kind of work at home, okay? So Rabbi Eliezer says over there that Apilo Hichniso Lo Meyot, in other words, even if she brought with her 100 maidservants, nevertheless she still is obligated to do something herself, okay, in the house. Omer Abalkio, so Abalkio said, Omer Abodah, in the name of Abodah, he says, Halocha ka Rabbi Eliezer. He says that the halacha taka follows Rabbi Eliezer. The Hainu Mishnah da Misnekai. So that this is a teaching, a Mishnah, which in return substantiates another Mishnah. In other words, this is a statement that substantiates a Mishnah that we have. Velo ka Omar Milsa Bapi Nafshe. And this is not an original statement on the part of Rav Malkiel, because he quoted it in whose name? Name of Rabbi Eliezer, okay? Okay. And not only that, actually, he said in the name of Rav Oda, who said that the halakha follows Rabbi Eliezer. So it's already, he's the third person to say. So it's not his own original opinion. Now, what are gumos? This is an interesting business, okay? Gemara in Nida talks about how do we know when a girl attains puberty, okay? Normally the sign of puberty, whether for a boy or for a girl, is the appearance of hair in the pubic area, okay? And what is the minimum amount of hair? It has to be shtei saros, okay? So if you take a look in the note on the side on the right over there, right? It says, Shmatita hi the inyan shtei saros, right? As to the business about two hairs, and afil biguma achas, yes, even if it's in one, only one pore. Guma over here is like a pore, okay? So at any rate, what is the inyan over there? All right, so he says gumas benido, that means in the Gemara Ganido, right? Bibo Simon, and the chapter Bo Simon says Rab Helbo Omar Rab Huno. So Abchelbo says in Rav Huna, says Shtei Saaros Sheomru Zorok Shehebi Yekoron Gumos. He says that the two hairs that they talk about, the two pubic hairs, they have to have roots in their own individual pores. Okay. Rav Malkiyo Omer Rav Odo Bar Avo. Rav Malkiyo said in Rav Odo Bar Avo. He says Gumos Apol Pishem Besaros. He says if we see the pores, even though we cannot see the hair, nevertheless it shows that she has already attained puberty. Okay? So, at any rate, as we see again over here, what is Rav Malkiel doing? He's reciting, really, halachas in the name of other people.
Yeah.
Well, in one case it's Rabbi Eliezer, in another case usually he cites Rav Ada Bar Amma. Okay? Yeah. He's the one who normally cites. Okay. Now, how about the next part over there? Yeah. Then, so those three statements, the Mishnah, the Gemara attributes to Reb Malkiyo. Now, Bloris and Ephemakla Gvino is Reb Malkiyo. Okay? Alright, so the Bloris. What is Bloris? So, the Gemara, the Ferakein Ma'abid and Ba'abid Zorah, you know, there's a tractate called Abid Zorah, you know, idolatry literally. So it's Tanu Rabbanan. We have a teaching over there that says, "Oyved keichovim, a goy, hamistaper miYisrael, who is being given a haircut by a Jew." Yeah. So in that case, what is a Jew prohibited from doing? The answer is the Jew can give him a haircut, but in those days, it was a custom among the Greeks or the Romans, particularly among the Romans, that they would leave a certain lock of hair that they left uncut. And that lock of hair, this was dedicated to the Avodah Zarah. You understand? So that the Gemara over there in Avodah Zarah says that when the Jewish Baba reaches a point near there, he has to stop. He's not allowed to to work in that particular area, because he would be in that particular case helping the Goy celebrate his Avodah Zarah. Does that answer your question that you asked before? Yeah, about the tattooing or something. Not allowed to help a Goy to celebrate Avodah Zarah, okay? All right. But anyway,
I don't understand the connection here, Phil. What's the connection between Maitzer and the Urim?
Okay, hold it. We'll see in a second what the connection is. All right. So, this then about the Bloris, right? So, the Kama, in other words, how much does he have to leave and not get into the danger zone, so to speak? So, I'm a Rab Malki, I'm a Rab Oda, right? So, again, Rab Malki Yosef, in the name of Rab Oda, Shalosh Etzbaos, the whole Ruach. He's not allowed to, he has to leave 3 fingers distance everywhere around that Bloris and not get anywhere near it. Okay. So, the Hainu Mastisa, and then he adds, and this is a teaching like a Mishnah. Okay? In other words, this is what? This is an original statement made by whom? By Rav Malkior. Malkior. Okay? Ephraim Akla, about the ashes that we just said, that you can't smear it on the skin and on a maka because it might be sort of tantamount to Sev's kaka, right? So it says, Hocha, it's here, as we learned it. Ushmatahi, the Lava Mistisakai. And he says that this is also, it's an original statement, actually, it's something that he'd heard, because it does not, it's not based upon a previous teaching. Elo Milsa Ba'ampe Nafshir Ko'omar. But rather, he said it himself on his own, that also, like the ordinary person, is prohibited to do it. Okay. Givino, what is this business about cheese? So the answer is Name also Bein Ma'amid in that chapter in Avodah Zarah, the Katoni be Mishnah, we learn over there a Mishnah that says Ugivinos Beis un Nike, right? And in other words, she not allowed to eat cheese of this particular right. In other words, Goyish cheese, right? Voy Migmora by Tama. And so the Gemara asked the following questions: why can't we? So I'm a Rab Malkiyor, I'm a Rab Adon, right? Yimnei says machlikin, because they smear. And of course, what do they smear? The answer is they smear lard on the cheese in order to preserve it. You see, so that's why they're not allowed to eat this kind of a cheese. Okay. So again, this is who? Rab Malkiyor. So this is the reason why. We now have the next statement in the Gemara, which says, Rav Papa said, what? Masnisin umasnisa Rav Malkiyo. When it is original teachings, original statements, then it is Rav Malkiyo. Shmatato, if it's only a report that he heard from somebody who heard from somebody else, then this is Rav Malkiyo. Okay? With Simonoch, and how do you know which is which? I mean, they like Simonim as mnemonic devices, in order to remember orally who said this and who said that. So it says the Simon is as follows. It says, Masniso Malkiso. It says, Masniso, in other words, things that have to do with Mishnah, Baraisis, it says, this is Malkiso. They're like queens. And of course, what does Malkiso look like? It looks like Malkiyo. So, in other words, when we have these original statements that are quoted in Mishnah of Baraisa, then in that particular case, this would be Rav Malkiyor. But if it's only reports, then it would be Rav Malkiyor. Now he says, "My Benayhu." So, what's the difference between them? So he says, "Iko Benayhu Shefoches." Says there is a machlokes between them as to whether it really was Malkiyor or whether it was Malkiyor. In other words, is this an original statement or is this simply a report of a statement made by somebody else? Okay? Rabbi Bibar Abaye copied. Rabbi Bibar Abaye was very careful, or the word also could mean was very angry, but let's take it in a sense, was very careful not to even what? Afilu arivdo de kusilta. Apparently what they would do was that they would smear some kind of powder on the implements that they used for shtelen bankis, in other words the cups or the knife that they would use and so forth, you understand? So you have to be very careful not to use this. Why? Because it also is liable to make a permanent mark. And that's why he didn't even do that. Rav Ashi Omar, but Rav Ashi disagrees, and he said, "Now, kol mokam sheyesh mako, makosim lechecholov. Wherever you actually see a wound, then the wound itself will show us that whatever he's putting on it is not doing it for what? For avodah zarah. So, in other words, getting back to the original statement that we had." Where Rav Malkiyah said, right, the name of Radu Barabba, he says that a person should never put Mefer Makla on it because it looks like it, but this is not an accepted halacha. Okay? Mm-hmm. In other words, it would be permissible to use any kind of a salve or anything like that in order to help the wound get better, and we're not concerned then that it's going to be exovis kaka.
As long as you're not making a letter,
right?
But it's allowed.
Yeah, well, you're not doing it for that purpose. You're doing it for medical purposes only. All right. To finish the Rashi over here, Masniso, right? This is Rapapa, Simona de Rabalkiokai. He's talking about the simon, about, and he says the grui minei shefoches. The reason is because he wants to take out. The machlek is concerning, the maid servants. The kuhu matznisa the malki amidah, because we say in all cases that the mishnah was the statement of Ramalkia. Klema mishnah deshvaches dukim kerav malkiyo. When you said that shvaches are like Rav Malkiyo, Rav Malkiyo more actually was Rav Malkiyo said matznisa the koma lav davka, so that. What it says over there, it's labdavk. It's not necessarily exactly the way it's written over here. Ela b'simona d'rab malkiyo lekemas nisa. But when it comes to the simon, what would be a statement, a typical simon of malkiyo, says we don't have any masnisa mishma.
Are you interpreting the word masnisa as true mishnah?
Yeah, either mishnah or baraisa. In other words, an original statement.
How does
Rav Malkiyo?
Are we assuming
he's a? Whereas Rav is a person who reports. What he hears, what somebody else said. See, so that's
you're saying that the Rav Malkiyah
right.
actually originated the Mishnah and Brisa? We assume that he's an Amora.
That he's a Tana.
He's a Tana who is being quoted
over here.
So the import of this statement is that Rav, you would be the only Tana who has the designation Rav then. Is there any other Tana who has a designation Rav as opposed to Rebbe or no designation?
I don't get your question.
Saying that Rav Malkiyah is thereby designated as a Tana, an originator of Mishnah and Brisa.
Yeah, that would be the implication over here.
Do you know of any other Tana that has the honorific Rav?
Well, of course, Rav himself, I mean.
Rav Tanopala. Okay,
right, that's the whole point.
That's the exception that proves the rule.
But maybe
at the time of
Rav, there were people who were sort of in a transition state between one and the other. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, but this would be particularly true if they learned in Eretz Israel and then they went to Babel and then they began their activities over there.
Because you don't see Rav saying Tana's Mishnah and Brises either.
Right.
Even if he's Tano Pollard, we give him the honorary status that he can express disagreement.
Yeah, because actually he learned in Eretz Yisrael before he went.
But there is no Mishnah and Brisa attributed to Rav.
Yeah, right.
So he would be this relatively obscure individual would be the only.
Yeah, but remember, Masnisa over here doesn't mean necessarily Mishnah. It could also be a Brisa, right?
Brisa.
Yeah, but that's true. I mean, the Brisa themselves only come from the Tanya state. All right. Why are you more on my tongue? Or more about
you?
More about
you? Interpret that as just original halacha as opposed to Brisa Mishnah.
Right. Correct. You see, Ramash and Hashem and Ashmatos, Simon and Shal Rav Malkiyo, the Heinish Wood, the Gumas, Rav Malkiyo Aminu. So the other things about the spit and the how many pores and so on, the hairs and the pores, but this is Rav Malkiyo, the Heinish the Gumar, you can be Heinish Bochers. So this is why it says, in the case of Shvachos, this is a disagreement as whether it's Malki or Malkiyo. The local Mal Shvachos, the Eicha Makle, Ela Shvachos greater. He doesn't say that you disagree about 2 points, but only about 1 point. The Rav, with the Rav Malkiyo, Kidakai Kai, and whatever is remains, only remains. All right, as I say, it's a little bit mixed up anyway. But Rashi continues, Masnisa Malkisa, he says, right, that, what is that? So he says, Mishnayas of Raisas, right? That's how he understands the word Masnisa. He says, Ikar he. They are the important thing. Vahainu Simon, Nisha Shemo Domen Nekeba, that the one whose name has like a feminine sound at the end, in other words, or, right? Mukminim Kul Masnaisa. So we say that all that we can attribute to him. The Havanami Loshin Nekeba, because the word Masnaisa, right, also sounds like it's a feminine word. Ali Bey. Vahainu Rav Malkiyo, Sheshmo Domen Nekeba. Mashbu So Shal Shame. Name Mashba Loshen Malchus, but you know the name Malkiyo also seems to imply what? Kingship. The Haina Mishnayos Brises, because and this would be in reference to Mishnayos and Brises too. Why? Shehein Ikor, because they are the important statement below Shmatos, and not you know that which you report that you heard from somebody who said something. Okay, the Yistim and Foresh. But there are those who explain as follows. It says, they say that there are two disagreements. So, Mashba Shvoches, Mishekin Evdo, Kach Lishoin the Cheshei, I'm not altogether sure what the Cheshei is. Alright, anyway, what is a Rivdo? Remember, he says that the last statement that we had is that Rabibi Barbai says he was careful not even to shmir, you know, a rivdo, in other words, he translates in the sense of on the makkah, kusilta. Now, what is a kusilta? It says, kli shemakabay, alas payemu. Well, whatever that is, that word I do not recognize, the payemu. But, as I said, what he has in mind from other areas, you know, would simply be that these were the tools used by the person who let blood, which was a common form, you know, of medicine back in those days. So it says, don't put any like powder or anything like that, because if it goes into the market, it's liable to resemble exodus kaka. So that's why along comes Rav Ashi and says, look, if you have a wound,
put it on
you put it on in any case. All right.
When the wound heals, the residual color of the powder disappear. The sound.
Now, if it disappeared, then it would be nothing.
So, I guess in this case, it would have
you know, it would stay for a time. You see, that's the point. This was the objection that they had before. Remember, okay. They says that you know it remains.
Where do you take what all of a sudden this maidservant and what?
Oh.